This is TWiT.
We are gathered together to speak of the $5 billion fine that was just leveled at Google. And I'm really curious. We had a debate. In fact, it got a little heated on Windows Weekly this morning because I think this is really kind of appalling. But I'd like to hear what you all think. The European Commission says there were three things that caused it to do this fine, three things that Google must correct in the next 90 days. It's abused its Android market dominance. It's all about Android in three ways. Bundling its search engine and Chrome apps into the operating system, number one. Blocking phone makers. This is the one. This one I agree with. Blocking phone makers from creating devices that run forked versions of Android. Google, Android is open source. Anybody can use it. Amazon has, of course. Amazon is based. The Fire operating system is Android, but it doesn't have the Google Play Store or any of the Google services on it. And that's legal. It's legit. If you want the Google Play Store, you have to have Chrome, and the default search has to be Google in the phone. And this is the one that I disagree with. I think Google overstepped their bounds. They also apparently told phone makers, if you want Google services on your phones, you can't make any phones with pure Android. You can't make a non-Google phone. And then finally, and this is something Google had stopped a few years ago, made payments to certain large manufacturers and mobile network operators to exclusively bundle the search app on handsets. Google apparently learned about the EU investigation 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and stopped doing that at that time. So really, two things Google still does, apparently. They must stop in the next three months. Google says they will appeal. And actually, I thought there was quite a good blog post by Sundar Pichai in which he said Google has, or Android rather, has created more choice.
Amen.
Yeah. And of course, the Windows people are going to be in favor of all of this because Windows, this is comparable in many ways to the antitrust attack on Microsoft in the 90s, bundling Internet Explorer, because of course that guaranteed that Internet Explorer would dominate everything, which was turned out to be.
Oh, I put a story up on the rundown, Mike, that goes into why it's different.
Yeah,
we actually talked about this last week and why it was different. And Leo, I felt like you explained that pretty well.
I wish I could remember what I said.
Was it Kevin explained it pretty well? It was basically along the lines of this is at the operating system. No, it wasn't at the operating system level.
So here, the biggest, now, of course, Mike covered this.
Yes, I mean,
you were the editor-in-chief of Windows Magazine at the time. Right. We covered it. It was exactly the DOJ investigation of Microsoft started when we launched Tech TV in 1998. And so we covered that for 6 years because that went on and on, and then later EU's action. I still don't think it's such a bad thing to bundle the browser in the operating system.
It's irrelevant. But the biggest difference, I think, is that the purpose of Windows was to behave as a platform for
others'
apps. The purpose of Android is to get Google search in the people's hands. That Android exists probably because Google wants to make the world safe for its search engine and doesn't want just Apple taking over other companies. Because if there was no Android, right, and there were Symbian or whatever operating systems one could imagine for smartphones, they could all just say, well, you know what? Google's too dominant. We just won't have Google. We won't let Google on. And so that's why they came out with Android.
Well, I don't frankly like a world where there's iOS and Symbian is not a world I want to live in.
No, because it would be iOS.
I think it's more than just getting the browser in hands, though obviously from a business perspective. But I think it was really about trying to create a competitive marketplace. And by making it free, I mean, that's the problem, that antitrust laws are so outdated. What in other times would look like dumping is instead a great favor to consumers by making this free and getting more low-priced phones out there. And I also think Google doesn't do the wrong thing in requiring manufacturers to either do authorized Android or unauthorized Android. But to do both is going to be really brand confusing. And all this talk we hear about fragmentation, that would be even worse. So I think Google's perfectly right.
Stacey, go ahead.
Oh, no. I actually agree with Jeff on this, which is, whoa.
You had to say actually agree.
Well, you know, there are topics, Jeff, where we disagree, but this one I'm with you. And I remember last week we kind of came to this conclusion. I think it's a good one, which is we don't have the antitrust infrastructure right now or the rules to govern the way we build hardware, software, and technology technology businesses today. So I think that's probably where we should take this focus.
In the U.S., this isn't an issue because Android and iOS are roughly at parity, about 50% each. Right. So neither is dominant. There's no monopoly position. So it's not an issue. Apparently, in the EU, Google has not only 80% of all the search, it has 75% of all the phones.
Yeah.
So it is, I don't know if that's a monopoly, but it is fairly dominant. And the EU, and Jeff, you're the expert on EU antitrust law, seems to favor competition among companies. And so feels like that Google's dominant position makes it hard for others to compete. Well, I celebrate the fact that Google bought Android and kept it open source.
Yeah. Amen.
And they offer it for free to a lot of people. And if you would like the Google services, it doesn't seem to me unreasonable if you want the Play Store to say, well, you got to include Google services, which includes Chrome. That, by the way, that's driven by consumer demand. Consumers prefer an Android device with Google's Play Store on it than not. So consumers are saying that.
And it gives them an easier, I mean, if you have to make a slightly different version of your app for like the Android App Store, for example, that's going to eliminate choice in apps and make it more difficult for developers and quote unquote innovation, our innovation.
So the way I look at it is there are two big issues. One is market dominance and the other is kind of lock-in. The whole assumption about market dominance is that you can exclude others from the marketplace.
Or use your dominance in one market to enter other markets.
And their other action against Google was very much like that in
with terms shopping.
Exactly. But here you have the two dominant operating systems, iOS and Android. And on the one hand, you have iOS, which is completely dominant. You know, you cannot install iOS on a phone that is not Apple's phone.
And you can put Chrome on iOS, but it's not the default browser.
And you can't get an app that's not approved.
And as Sundar Pichai points out, 1,300 companies are running Android. Yeah. It is a very open system. There's a free version. It's creating all this, all these other companies, including the most direct competitor to Google, which is Amazon. Amazon uses the free version of Android to basically compete directly against Google. So Amazon has all kinds of alternatives to the Google Play Store, to the content that Google is selling and stuff like that. And Google just allows this. That's how open they are. Their most direct competitor is basing their entire platform on Android, on the free version of Android. Like, if that isn't open, I don't know what is. You know, if that isn't so a generous policy, I guess, for lack of a better term, I don't know what is. And Apple, you couldn't imagine anything like that from Apple.
No, you couldn't.
You can't uninstall Safari, but Sundar Pichai has on his blog post a GIF that shows you can remove Chrome from Android and install Opera in under 30 seconds.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, it seems to me the opposite of anti-competitive, but...
And the browser doesn't really bring them huge advantage, right? They make their money on advertising on sites.
But the browser is what gives them Google search.
Yeah, I understood. But search is only part of what they do now. They make their money from advertising, and much of that advertising is off of search.
Yeah, it would still work on sites. Opera Mini or...
So let me go back to your point about antitrust. Of course, the key difference between the U.S. and Europe is in the U.S., it's about consumer protection. In Europe, it's about company size. And, you know, you got too big. And there's no statutory definition of too big, but there's kind of a belief. So last week I couldn't be on the show because I was in Europe doing a few things, including going to the Gutenberg Museum. But I also met with the head of CNIL, the French Data Protection Authority, and another 10 people that she brought in for a conversation. And then I met with the head of digital in the German parliament. And then I just had a conversation with UK regulators. And it's an interesting shift in time right now where, you know, I've been out there being very critical of EU regulation. And now suddenly they're willing to listen to that viewpoint.
Interesting.
And I think that what we've seen in European regulation is that they're recognizing that it's protectionist. Dorothea Bär, the German MP who spoke at this conference where I was, the publishing company that throws the conference, a DLD, an executive there did a speech beforehand in which he was trying to say, we got to be innovative, we got to be reasonable, and we got to be realistic like Jeff Jarvis. Okay, great. But then he defended the Leistungsschutzrecht. He defended the regulation they have. But then she got up as a member of parliament, and she's a conservative member of parliament, but she scolded the publishers and she scolded them and said, this is protectionist. And it's not appropriate for the time and for the year. So there's a time right now, there's a little window I see where regulators may be open to different perspectives on this. And in France, I had a reasonable discussion too. They were considering a fake news law that has, you know, huge problems in the UK as well. So what we see happening is we see the courts with the right to be forgotten. We see the antitrust regulators with this antitrust effort, which was really pushed very hard by publishers in Germany. And then we have legislation going after things like privacy, GDPR, and hate speech and all that. So there's this huge, my second point is regulatory reflex in Europe. And they, when I sat down and talked to them, it was kind of, well, we're going to regulate. How should we? Rather than starting and saying, well, is there a problem we should deal with?
Can I just say parenthetically, completely parenthetically, how refreshing it is to hear opposing viewpoints debated in a rational, sensible way, and then a consensus attempt to reach consensus.
Europe.
Wow. How sophisticated those Europeans are.
Amen. Amen, brother. Amen.
Jesus.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of great.
It's interesting. So there is a little shift away from this.
I sense an opening. I sense it, not a shift, but an opening to have a different kind of conversation. And I welcome that tremendously. You know, and so I'm not against all regulation. I'm for smart regulation that starts with evidence of harm and evidence of issues. So the issue back to
that's Android a good question. Where is the evidence of harm? That's a very good point.
Where's the harm?
Yeah.